CEO and company, welcome. And thank you for gracing us with your presence. We were told that you were very far away, but you make it a point that you give this committee the necessary respect to come and put your position on the matter. There has been quite a lot of very rich engagements. We have been thoroughly conversed to take a particular posture that in the main seeks to ensure the transformation of the industry, the empowerment of our people, ensuring that the owners of this country, the 56 million that is growing, PTYL, TTSA, are the beneficiaries of this national resource that some of you have been privileged to manage, to expropriate, but with compensation or without. But ensuring that indeed we achieve these noble objectives of taking our country forward, making us to catch up with the development, but ensuring that those that are yearning to participate are also allowed to participate, to avoid what we normally would call inclusionary exclusion, because that's the outcry. Young people have appeared before this committee. We just had now the sector that represented the women. I wouldn't say even they represent the women. They represent everybody that is yearning for participation. Black business outcry. So we've had so many people. What we find very interesting that there are those that are standing on the extreme left and those on standing on the extreme right. We are in the middle. And our view is that we would wish to coerce everyone to work towards this noble objective. Actually, if we have things our way, we didn't need to enact legislation to achieve the objective. If peer review mechanism were to have kicked in and everyone saw the vision the country should be taking and make sure that voluntarily we walk the distance and achieve the objective. So you are on the floor, Mr. Shamil. I think it is fair that your delegation be appropriately introduced.
So I'm Shamil Jusup, the CEO of Vodacom.
My name is Andrew Barnes. I head up the regulatory function.
Thank you, Mr. Danger, Chief Officer, Corporate Affairs.
Nkate Konyoka from the Legal Department.
My name is Lomero from Vodacom Regulatory Affairs.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for giving us the opportunity to present. Chair, I think you've accurately captured some of the dilemmas that we face within as an industry. And I think we stand here before you today in the committee asking for help, because I think the industry is at the crossroads, and I think we need to, I think you have the unenviable task of basically determining what happens in this industry for the next 100 years. So this is an important piece of legislation. My view is, that, honestly, is that you should not rush it, even though we in dire need of spectrum. The committee should carefully consider the approach that needs to be taken and in that respect, you know, shape the future of the country going forward, as this plays a very important role in the fourth industrial revolution. Chair, just maybe a few comments before I get into the presentation itself. I think South Africa is also at a dire point where we want to see data prices drop faster. And as operators, I think we want to drop the prices faster as well. And I explain why this is difficult. One of the issues that you're faced with, and you'll see prices are coming down, this last year came down another 16% again, and over 45% data prices have dropped in the last 3 years. But it's still not enough, because we need to drop it even faster. And I think one of the big things affecting it is the availability of spectrum. Chair, you made the comment that the industry needs lots of players. I think we also need to look around the world and see what's going on. The most successful countries have three network operators, the U.S., China, and so on. So generally, it's between two and four is the optimal number of operators that you have in a country. Yes, you do have things like MVNOs in countries. The route that we're taking is a different route. We're looking to create a WAN, a wholesale open access network, which essentially, in my mind, is basically to give smaller players the ability to pool their spectrum and invest together. But the industry is about investment. And it's very much about investment, and it needs to attract investment. Now, you could have more successful players in South Africa because you could be attracting bigger players who want to come here. The reason they don't want to come here is because there isn't policy certainty. And the policy is a mess, to be quite blunt, in terms of, you know, I mean, if you take that, we haven't had spectrum since 2004, and every single country around us has allocated spectrum, including all the ones that we're in. It's quite damning. Lesotho is on 5G now, and we still haven't even done 4G properly. So, you know, I think it's quite a desperate situation. And this need for spectrum also helps to drive down costs. And I'll give a little bit of insight why that's the case. So I think it's really important that we shape it. I think also policy certainty. So if there was policy certainty, maybe the Orange and, you know, Deutsche Telekoms and so on would want to invest. And maybe they'd want to buy one or two of the smaller players and put the aggressive investment in. But they haven't, and they haven't because of the uncertainty. The industry has lost 140 billion rand in the last 2 years in market cap. And the reason for that is they look at the regulatory environment and they say, you know, and they don't get the vibrancy of the South African debate. They don't get that we debate things and we then find the right way. So when they see something like the white paper and it says, you'll take all the spectrum away from operators and you'll take away all their licenses, and remembering that we've invested 140 billion rand in South Africa already, it creates nervousness. So if you're sitting somewhere in the Midwest in the U.S., you're running for cover. And, you know, the president has made his intent clear in terms of investment into the country, and I think it's a very noble approach. But we're shooting ourselves in the foot by not providing clarity, not just in this industry, but in a few. But let me talk about ours. Okay, so maybe a little bit about Vodacom. Also, Chair, I think it's a little bit disingenuous of some of the previous speakers. It's interesting because a lot of people worked in different parts. So we've, you know, you've had everybody move around. Irene was involved in the setup of Smile. Sipo worked for Vodacom. Godfrey worked for Vodacom. Rob worked for Vodacom. So it's nice to see how when you change your seat, how different approach you can take. Why I'm making this point, it's also very important. I listened to the whole MTR part discussion, and to be honest, it's nonsense, because Telkom set the mobile termination rates in this country. And why say that? Because Telkom owned Vodacom. So they decided what rate they wanted to pay themselves. So, you know, when we sit there and you say, yes, but they got this big advantage, Telkom created the advantage to themselves. So, you know, it's also disingenuous when we say some of these things. Talking about Vodacom in general, Vodacom now operates in six countries. We have 109 million customers. We have 4G spectrum in all countries besides South Africa. Yes, it is true that we are valued at 235 billion rand, but we have lost over 80 billion rand in market cap over the last 2 years. Chair, one of the big things about wherever we are, you'll notice that we try and be the first operator in every country. And the reason we do that is we strongly believe that telcos are about capital investment. And you compete on two layers. You compete on distribution, you compete on infrastructure. So when you're rolling out infrastructure in every country that you operate in, one is you're creating a lot of jobs in the process, and you're creating a whole industry. So in South Africa, there's over 1 million jobs that have been created by the telco industry. So you build a lot of infrastructure, and that creates a lot of downstream, whether it's in the distribution or the suppliers or the maintenance and so on. And I'll show you some of the numbers that are quite staggering in terms of the contribution to this economy, but also into every economy that we operate in. So my honest view, Chair, is if you're going to be a telco and you don't have money, you really need to find money before you actually try and do it. Also, spectrum is a scarce resource. There's only so much God-given spectrum in a particular band. And they haven't yet found a way to invent to create more, unfortunately. But so if you take the spectrum and split it up to multiple different players, you never really get the benefit of that spectrum. And in South Africa, there's a number. It's not that we have a shortage of spectrum. We have a lot of spectrum sitting in the wrong ends. So we have two players that only till recently, which is sitting with a lot of spectrum, which is Rain and Liquid. They've not utilized that spectrum. We're sitting with an entity called Telkom that is swimming in spectrum. Yes, the high band spectrum. And the reason for that is because it's a state-owned entity. They don't tell you that they were given this use advantage and they have all the spectrum, which in the future is only going to be pay for. Yes, it is true that they don't have low band spectrum. But, you know, I think it's important to understand that distinction. Jay, we're also a company that ensures that we focus on transformation. We've just done the biggest BE deal, probably in the country in total, but the biggest deal in telecoms. It's a 16.5 billion BE deal. This is on top of the deal that just came to an end after 10 years. Our original deal was 7.5 billion. And the people who invested in the deal got 7 times the return in terms of what it was. Today we have a 20% effective black ownership. We're the most empowered telco, and we are the only level 3 telco in the country. And that's because we make a huge effort to be able to do it. So, I mean, to put into perspective, that means that 70 billion rand of Vodacom is in the hands, in black hands. So it is very transformed. In terms of transforming the sector, we're the most empowered company on the JSE. We've invested 31 billion, this is just this last year. 31 billion has been procured from BE level 4 and above suppliers. 10.6 billion has been spent on 51% black-owned suppliers. 9 billion has been spent with 31 black women-owned suppliers. This is all in 1 year. 443 million has been spent on skills development, both in Vodacom and training our trade and so on. 100 million has been spent on social investment. We also partner very closely with government. I heard a comment earlier about what happened to the money and the obligations that were fulfilled. Chair, government couldn't decide which schools to connect. And it took me going to the president, President Zuma at the time, and literally jumping up and down and saying, look, you know, we've been sitting on this money for 5 or 6 years. Can we please spend it? I even came to this committee and made the same comments. Eventually, we were given the new minister, Stella, to work with us, and the rollouts happened. The schools have been connected, and we did it in like 18 months. She gave us a tight deadline. We made it happen. Today we have 3,000 schools that Vodacom connects with connectivity as well as ICT equipment in every school. 92 of the teacher training centers, and there's just over 140 teacher trainer centers in the country, are run by Vodacom, resourced by Vodacom, paid for by Vodacom. We've trained 250,000 teachers. We have 10 youth development centers that operate out of the same, this is government infrastructure. We have 10 youth development centers with government. We've taken 966 kids literally off the street and trained them and made them Cisco and Microsoft skilled technicians. We've taken 650 million rand and created something called the Innovator Trust, where we buy shares in Vodacom. The dividends that flow we then use to develop SMEs. We've already trained 53 SMEs this last year, big SMEs. We give all the universities free access to data, to access all curriculum and so on. 19 out of the 26 universities have taken it up. To be honest, I'm not sure why the others haven't. Even though it's free, they've chosen not to take it. We have 550,000 kids who access our free education portal, where we've taken all the syllabuses, digitalized it, and made it free on Vodacom eSchool. We have 1,200 beneficiaries of our bursary program. So, Chair, I would say you can see we don't just, in every market that we operate in, we make sure that we also give back. One of the big commitments we've just made, and we work very closely with the Department of Basic Education. I've been pushing to say let's digitalize the textbooks. I met with Deputy Minister Suti 2 weeks ago, and he said, okay, government is now ready. We've digitalized the textbooks. Now you need to play your part. And we've committed that all schools, all 14 million kids, will have free access to data in schools. We're now working with the department to ensure that we can get 14 million tablets. And I'm already talking to the Googles and Facebooks and so on to try and help subsidize so that we can give each of our children access to a tablet and give them the opportunities that we weren't necessarily given. In terms of the ICT objectives, I'm not going to repeat all of them, Chair, safe to say that we support all the objectives that are set out by government for the ICT sector, including rural coverage and so on. And I'll show you where Vodacom has been doing significantly more than anyone else to ensure that all the rural areas are connected. The President made a few comments really encouraging the investment into the economy. I think Irene mentioned that government's intention is to raise money from spectrum auctions. I think it's fair to say that in all countries around the world, and again it would be disingenuous for me to tell you that we're not paying for spectrum in other countries. We are paying for spectrum in other countries. Including some of the neighboring countries. We just bought spectrum in Mozambique, 4G spectrum recently. So we do pay for spectrum. South Africa has never charged for spectrum, but they've charged annually for spectrum, which is a difference. Other countries charge you upfront, but it is a trend around the world that government use it as an opportunity to raise money. At the same time, government does attach certain obligations to that, like rural coverage. That's also happening in a lot of countries. So, you know, where they say, if you're given the spectrum, you need to be able to achieve this, and obviously if you don't, there's penalties attached to that. based on the certainty that the president has promised in the sector and so on, we, Vodacom, is committed to invest another 50 billion rand in the network over the next five-year period. So that's a tune of almost 10 billion a year on average. So, Chair, it's a very, very capital-intensive industry. And you'll understand why when you see how the technology keeps changing. Some of the key drivers of the mobile market in South Africa, this is what I call the ICT ecosystem. So firstly, you need capital. And you need a lot of capital to invest into a telco network. Secondly, you need spectrum. And that's an important ingredient to be able to achieve the success, because the networks work on radio. Thirdly, behind the spectrum, you need, it's not on the slide, but you need a fixed network. Okay, so you need fiber, especially when you go into things like 4G, 5G, and so on. You need, behind every mobile network is a fixed network. So that's also a huge cost, because you've got to build it. You've got to maintain coverage and quality. And as your growth goes up and usage grows up, you need to ensure that you constantly, so your money doesn't just go into coverage, it goes into capacity, it goes into coverage, it goes into quality. And so you have to meet your customer needs, and your customer needs are coverage, quality, as well as price. And obviously customers want to pay less and less for the service. So price reductions are very much part and parcel of the industry. Usage growth and a rapid increase in data growth makes it expensive. And with the lack of spectrum, you'll see that becomes, you're spending the capex, but you're not necessarily spending it optimally. And then you need to invest again. So it's this constant cycle. So it's not an industry, Chair, the way I liken it is if you built a factory, you build a factory, you lay out the capital, and maybe 10, 15 years' time, you have to build a new factory or upgrade the plant and so on. In telco, the plant is upgraded every year. It's a continuous investment cycle, so it doesn't stop. The minute you start stopping, your business, your network deteriorates, and competition overtakes, so you have to keep investing. In the last 4 years, we've invested more than 40 billion into our network. We're going to invest 50 billion over the next few years, and just in this last year, we've invested 9.3 billion rand in our network. Now, Che, if you ask me, are you spending that money optimally? The honest answer is no. Because what's happening today, and maybe it's important for me to just explain how a network operates. So you hear this jargon about 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G. What does it mean? So basically what happens in a network is you get spectrum. So firstly, when we launched, we had something called 2G spectrum. So there was 900, and then it became 900 and 1800. So these are bands of spectrum, and they're radio waves in which the networks communicate and that the technology has been built on. So when you build a base station, at the back of it you build a fixed part that connects to a base station controller, which then connects to a switch, which then connects to another base station controller, and then to another set of base station. So that's the route that it goes. You need fiber between all these elements, or high-speed transmission for all these elements. So behind every mobile network is a fixed network. So that's the first thing. The second thing is 2G was for voice. Then came 3G. 3G was like almost like a hybrid technology. It could do data, but it wasn't optimal in it. And why it's not optimal? In 3G, when you connect, in 2G, when you connect this campus, this parliament, okay, and you have lots of users, it stays, the cell still stays the same size, so the same amount of rooms and so on get covered. In 3G, when you add load, the cell becomes smaller. So you have to build many more base stations to be able to carry the traffic. So what's happening in our country is we're having to build a lot more 3G base stations because we don't have enough 4G. And we don't have 4G. We've got what I call almost a bastardized 4G. We've made a plan. And basically what 4G is 4G is a proper data technology. So when you cover this campus, it stays covered. You put lots of users. The speed deteriorates, but the cell stays the same size. So you have to get people onto the 4G network and not the 3G network. The problem is a 4G device costs $65 or $9.99, and a 3G device costs you 300 rand. So you've got this huge differential, which also becomes a problem. Some of that is changing now. We as Vodacom have been driving that cost down quite aggressively by trying to conglomerate spend and so on. So the 4G device will drop by from $65 to $40. So you'll be able to get it for like a $5.99. And there's a new thing at the back of this big explosion in India, 4G, where you can now even buy one for like under 300. So this is going to change the face of telco and so on. But also it will help us to drive efficiencies on the network. Because right now you're investing the money, but you're having to put it. So give you an example. We have 82.5%. 82.5% of the country is connected with 4G. But we only have 8.5 million 4G devices. The rest of the devices, the rest of the 13, 14 million people, in addition that's using data, outside of the 3G users, so our 20.5 million people that are using data are all using it on 3G. So it's completely inefficient, and we have to keep investing to keep the capacity up. And that's one of the big issues that we face with. In addition to that, we carry all Cell C's or most of Cell C's traffic. And going forward, we'll be carrying a big portion of Telkom's traffic on our spectrum, not on their spectrums. So that's the important thing about roaming, is you're carrying somebody else's traffic on your network. And we have been doing that for Cell C for the last 20 years. So sharing is not something new. Sharing's been happening for the last 20 years. We also, in addition, there's this concept that we don't share technology. That's not true. And the reason why it's not true is because it's become so costly that we're sharing, we share sites. So we share most of our sites in the country. We basically buy from each other. And in the early years, there was this is mine, that is yours. But it's quickly realized that, look, we all need each other. So even when we cover stadiums, so if, for instance, we built stadiums with MTN. MTN builds one, we build one, and we share. Telkom and Cell C get the benefit through the roaming agreement of the same thing. And that's how we did the World Cup as well. It was us and MTN who basically did the... Telkom built the fixed infrastructure, we did the mobile and the infrastructure, and we shared. Also, we've just entered into what we call a deep passive sharing agreement with Telkom, where we're going to share even more elements. So at the moment, we rent sites from each other. Now, the new agreement that we have with Telkom is we're going to share the container, which will help them to also roll out more rapidly, but also help us to reduce costs. So it's a dual benefit. The South African networks are among the best in the world in terms of speeds, capacity, coverage, and so on as well. But you can see, if you look at this, Chair, it's quite interesting. Firstly, on the left, you're seeing, you see all these comparisons on pricing, but you don't see how the spectrum compares in all these countries. And you can see South Africa is one of the lowest allocation of spectrum that we have. And when it comes to spectrum per 100,000 customers, you can see on the right, how much, that's why I say Telkom is swimming in spectrum. They have 60 megahertz of 2.3 spectrum. They have 3.5 spectrum. They have all the big bands because historically, when you're a fixed operator, you give this. And if you were the fixed operator, which was also owned fully by government, you had everything. And that hasn't been taken away. And I just think, so I think it's, when I hear the sad story about how, the big bad wolves are eating up everything, and that we're not growing, with all due respect to my friend Sipo, they grew 55% in the last quarter. They have 11.2 million mobile customers. So they've grown, we grew 4.6%, they grew 53.8%. And they say they're not gaining share. They made 3.6 billion rand of revenue in the last 6 months in mobile. So which means if you double that, they'll make like almost 7.5 billion of revenue. And they say they're not making money. Maybe I'm confused. So I think these are important things that we need to differentiate on. The other thing when it comes to pricing, there's three different things that we do in our pricing comparisons. We look at bundle, we look at validity periods, and we look at commitment. And this is driven so that we can make sure that the lower end users get the maximum benefit. So a gig today, and we've added another gig to it, at night is now 75 rand a gig, call it. So it's 149 rand for two gigs. A gig costs you 99 rand if it expires in 14 days, 79 rand if it expires in 7 days, 29 rand if it expires in a day, and 12 rand for an hour. So which price of a gig did Alison compare? She only chose to take the 149 rand and ignore the rest, whereas 80% of everything that we sell is 99 rand and below, which if you take the average price per meg and you compare that, it compares favorably against the world. That doesn't mean that prices don't need to come down, but it's also not true that, you know, we are priced. That accepted, but we do accept that we need to drop certain price points, like the 30-day price points. We are looking at how we readdress that, whereas the rest are very competitive in the marketplace today. So, Chair, this just represents that 80% of prepaid customers buy hourly, daily, and weekly bundles. Part of the reason for that is the way they get paid. They choose to buy hourly, weekly bundles. Part of it is because they get cheaper prices if they do that. 25% of contract subscribers buy hourly, daily, and weekly. I think it's also important to note that when you look at prices in the contract space, it's very much covered with the cost of a smartphone. One of these smartphones today, this smartphone costs 30,000 rand. This is the new iPhone. Now, you know, as consumers, we don't think like that. We think still that the phone is free. It's not. It's 30,000. And that phone price, or a cheaper version of it, would be 18,000 or 20,000 of the iPhone. That gets built into the price because you recover it in the subscription that you charge. So you basically take the cost of the device, you split it over 24 months, okay, and you recover that, and then you charge for the service on top of that. So when you look at the pricing, always remember that the cost of the device is included in that. And I don't think people ever realize that these are computers. This is more capacity than even the computer I have in front of me. So these things have become extremely expensive, whereas 7 years ago, average price of a device was 2,500 rand. So that's how things have changed. As you've gone into smartphones, and people want the latest iPhone, the S9, the Note, you know, all of these type of things, and these things are quite costly. In terms of pricing, there's also this misconception that prepaid customers pay higher. So if we take, this is just our different segments of how we sell, and you'll see we have high value, mass aspirers, mass bottom of the pyramid emerging, youth customers, and so on. So basically, if we look at the different prices, the mass customers pay on average 29% lower than your high-value customers, and your youth consumers pay 51% lower than your high-value customers. And the bottom shows basically the percentage of sales that are basically daily, weekly, and fortnightly. Price per meg has been coming down, as you can see. Chair, last year, down 22%. So your price per meg is dropping an average of 16 to 20% a year, and your traffic is growing basically. So it's a 21% growth drop over the last couple of years, and a 52% growth in the traffic. The problem is you've got to be able to cope with the growth of the traffic, which is where your investment's going in. Sorry, just to finish the story on the investment part and why that's important as well. So now with the 9.3 billion rand we're spending this year, we're adding a lot of capacity and we're building coverage, and some of that goes to rural and so on. But most importantly, if we had access to spectrum, we can reutilize that same base station more. So what it does, if you don't, on a base station, as you're adding load onto the base station, you add more radios. When you run out of radios, you're either going to go build a new site. So you've got to go build a new site, which becomes extremely expensive, because just to erect the site and so on is 2 million, and then it's your annual rentals and so on and so on. Whereas if you had access to spectrum, you can reutilize the same mast, the same site, and you just add additional capacity on. And that's what spectrum does. It gives you the ability to add more to a same site. In terms of empowering education, I've spoken about that, but we also make a number of health sites free, a number of job sites free, so that people have free access to it, and this is part of our offerings. Deep rural coverage is a big focus area for us. In March, we 101 deep, I call it deep rural. This is rural of rural coverage, because our coverage actually is quite good in the rural areas. But we're sitting at something like 99.8% 2G coverage, 98.9%. 3G coverage and 82.5% 4G coverage. But we still need to invest more in what I call rural of rural. So what we've done is we've gone out to tender and we've taken local black companies to help build and maintain these sites in the deep rural areas. And the reason why some of this has not happened is because of the lack of, remember I said there has to be transmission of fiber, a microwave for us to be able to build sites in deep rural areas. That has not been there. I think the other important thing to remember, one of the biggest things that held back the industry, which Telkom conveniently don't tell you about as well, up to 10 years ago, I think it's about 10 years now, telcos in South Africa were not allowed to build their own transmission. They had to procure it under government rules by legislation from Telkom. So Telkom were given a big leg up. So on the one side, they set the mobile termination rates. On the other side, they gave themselves a leg up by making sure that all the transmission had to be bought from them. And it's only 10 years ago that we started to create things like Dark Fiber Africa, Broadband Infocro, and so on. And then we started to build our own fiber and transmission. So we have been lagging. Today we have 93% of our sites on high-speed transmission or fiber, which is, it's been a huge cost to be able to build it. But honestly, it's because Telkom wouldn't give us better prices. So it's nice when you sit there and you play like, you know, you're all open and you want to give everybody everything. But, you know, the big bad wolves, the telcos, the don't want to share and so on. But you don't want to actually, and even till today, you don't get good prices on fiber from Telkom. And that's why all telcos use DFA, which is a co-build, which, by the way, Vodacom anchored in a shared model so that everybody could have shared infrastructure on fiber. So one of the other big things to remember in South Africa is that we have an over-dependency on mobile. Why I say that is that our biggest issue today in South Africa is not access to mobile. Our biggest issue today is access to fixed. Every other country, and I flew directly in from London, And one of the big things in spending some time there with some of the Vodafone entities and so on, and looking at the whole fiber infrastructure, the Germans are looking at how they can get 1 terabyte capacity to every home. Our total homes covered today in South Africa with either fiber or DSL is 950,000. We have 16 million households. That's why I say we have an over-dependency on mobile. What we needed to do, what this proposal should have been talking about, in my view, is that we should have been talking about how do we build more fiber. Because mobile has its limitations. 5G will improve that. But it remains silent to a large degree on the building of fixed infrastructure. Every other country around the world is trying to make sure that every home, every business has access to fiber. Chair, as we look at the bold proposals, let me first say what we did in the as an industry, we went forward. When the white paper came out, we met with the department, we had a lot of engagements and tried to come up with what we call a hybrid model. And really, in my mind, the hybrid model seeks to ensure that smaller players who can't have access to spectrum can pool their investment. Because if you look at a lot of small players today, and to be honest, if I was a small player, I'd be pooling my investment with someone else. Because if I've got spectrum, if Vodacom is spending 9.3 billion, MTN spending even a little bit more than that at the moment, trying to, and we're having this this fight about that is pushing out and building out coverage. But your smaller players, if they pool their investment, you get this around the world. They call NATCOs. So people pool their investment and they build together. I call it building from cent and out. You don't need a wand to be able to achieve that. It's that kind of common sense. But because people want to have competitive elements, because of egos, because of a number of different things, some of the small players don't get together and actually pool their investment. They go and they invest and they build in the same areas. Whereas if you're going to compete with a bigger player, I would say there is an opportunity to do it, like it's done around the world. But okay, if we have to create a wholesale open access network to allow people to pool their investment, then it should be what we call the competitive WAN. And the WAN should then be given spectrum, but the industry should be given spectrum as well. Now, I listened to talk earlier about let's only give one block of spectrum to the industry. That will be a disaster because every company has invested. You've got 4 active mobile operators. My view would be make 4 blocks of spectrum available to the existing players. Charge them for it if need be. Set obligations. I strongly believe that the MNOs are in the country. Don't labor the WAN with rural coverage obligations. It's the big networks. They've been here for 25 years. Give them the responsibility for it. We should take the responsibility of rural coverage, not the WAN. And when we created this hybrid model, part of it was, and in the deliberations, I said to the people, let's ensure that the WAN is a success. Let's make sure that when we create the WAN, that the WAN has every chance of succeeding. Don't tell the WAN that it has to build rural coverage first, because it won't make money. And then it will fail, and then we'll say, look what happened. Rather say to the guys, look, invest where you want. Give them the spectrum, let them do it at their pace, according to the level of investment, help them to be successful. Industry agreed they will buy 30% of the capacity from the WAN. I call it an underpin. I didn't call it an offtake. The reason for that is because we did the same for the concept came from what we did for DFA. We did the same for DFA. We went and we bought capacity from them. They could then use that to go to a bank and say, look, I've got one customer, this is it. So we thought this through very carefully in terms of it. Now, we agreed on what it is. The problem is that the bill doesn't reflect what we agreed on. And the bill, in my view, is been surpassed also with events. So firstly, we've had a policy directive that has come out. The policy directive and the bill don't talk to each other. Now, both of these documents have come from the department. You know, we encouraged them to fix it beforehand, but as fate would have it, it came out in two different times. And so, personally, I would have slowed the bill down, should the two things talk to each other, then issue it. Now we've got a bill that is divergent to basically the to the policy directive that's come up. The policy directive seeks to let me jump here to the policy directive. So the policy directive seeks to basically ensure that the industry gets spectrum, and also the and that we get on with the auction, and that we get moving, and we cover the country, and we meet the different obligations. Now, if you're creating this wholesale open access network and the WAN and so on, I think it's important that you've chosen a path. You've said, so you've had different options. One of the options you could have said, you MNOs, you have to create what we call MVNOs that are going to sell on your behalf. Okay, and those MVNOs are going to be majority black-held and so on, so you want more transformation of the industry. However, and those models were put forward, but they fell on deaf ears. It was instead decided that you do an infrastructure play, so that's a service layer play. You want to play in the infrastructure level and give people the ability to do it. Now, if you're choosing this route, and you're saying this is a shared model, then that's okay. But then you need to ensure that on the other side, if you're going to be paying for the spectrum, that you have certain rights that are attached to it. Because why would you pay for it when you're going to get it free probably in the WAN? Why would anybody pay? So remember, each of these blocks, if you look at the last ICASA, in the absence of anything else, the last ICASA reserve price was 3 billion rand a block. So with the intent of raising 4 billion, 12 billion, sorry. The latest directive talks about three blocks. So that would be, if we use the same thing, like I say, in the absence of anything else, is about 9 billion reserve price before the auction starts. And then the way an auction is designed, it's designed to run up in price. That's why Irene says, look, let's just give them one. Then they can fight it out and we can get lots of money from them. So, but then you kill all the other investments that have been made. So, you know, I think the part is the wholesale open access network can survive. The industry needs to support it. It should be given access to some of the infrastructure, but it should be done in a way, you know, it should rent sites from us. If we don't want to give them sites, then you should regulate it. But they should be given the ability to be able to use some of the stuff. The way the policy directive is written at the moment, some of the things that were addressed, there were a couple of concerns in the different iterations. The department did fix a few things, like the return of existing spectrum, which was creating a lot of uncertainty because investors were reading this and saying, oh, okay, so tell me, you're going to invest in the network and then you must give it back tomorrow. How does that make sense? So they did fix a few things that's there. But there's quite a few things that have not been addressed and also that are inconsistent between the policy directive and the bill. So let's first deal with what the policy directive says and what the bill says. So the industry said we will buy 30% of the capacity as an underpin. That was the agreement. That is not reflected in either in the bill or in the policy directive. A different version of it has come out, which says we'll each buy 30%. So if we're each going to buy 30%, and there's six players, that's 180% of the one, then where does it help any of the smaller players? So basically, what was said was that the industry will buy 30% of the capacity as an underpin, and each player can decide. And if the players don't take it up, they will split it by market share with any part that's not taken up. So you'll first be able to buy. If you don't end up taking it up, then we'll do it. Now, let's park that for a second. just look at what the policy directive says to the bill. The policy directive says each licensee assigned currently assigned spectrum must procure a minimum of 30% WOM capacity for a period of not more than 3 years, whereafter authority may determine minimum of 30% WOM capacity procured collectively. The bill says something different. Okay, and I call this housekeeping. The two things need to be aligned. We can't have two different sets of rules. The consortium ownership, same thing. The policy directive says one thing, the bill says something else. The same with the terms and conditions. Again, in terms of universal service obligations, same thing, inconsistencies between the two. The bill also requires us, the directive requires us to go do, to go and apply every time we want to reuse or refarm spectrum. That would be a complete disaster. We have 13,000 base stations. We have six types of radios just on one layer. So you've got different types of radios. You probably have 20, 30 different types of radios. You're looking at hundreds of thousands of permutations of how you use to utilize refarming. And we need to go for an application. That will take us like way backwards, and you'll need this whole campus just to basically be able to deal with the application from the industry. So I just think that would be like severely going backwards. The bill still contains certain radical changes that I think are fundamentally flawed. So my personal view is the bill has been surpassed by the directive. The directive creates the WAN. The directive allocates spectrum to the WAN. It allocates spectrum to the industry. It gets on with it. It's done within the current legislation. So there's no pressing need for this legislation. If this legislation comes out, then it needs to be transforming the industry for the next 100 years. And firstly, it needs to be aligned in terms of what it's seeking to achieve. Because if we set out and achieve the objectives already, then we need to look at it. Secondly, the bill should create certainty. I've said this to the previous minister as well in a public forum. The bill must seek to create certainty for the industry in totality. Whether it's the directive or whether it's the WAN, it's the telecoms industry. Forget about me, forget about Vodacom. You need to talk about what's right for the sector, what's right for the industry. And you need to be creating it so that people want to invest in our country. When you write a directive that is 10 parts negative and 2 parts that says, by the way, the industry will get spectrum, you're not creating certainty. And I said this to the minister in a public forum, and he said, look, I hear you, and so on. But it's important that these things are, the way we talk to the outside world, the way we see it, because we want the investment, we need people to invest in our telcos so that we can continue to grow them. It's also important to note that, you know, three of the big, so Vodacom, MTN, and Telkom are all listed entities. And these listed entities don't just attract local investment, there's a lot of foreign investment in there. So we're very dependent on certainty for us to be able to get that and also the level of investment to come into our country. So some of the issues that are still contained in the bill, all mobile operators have to provide cost-based wholesale access to their networks and services. Now, there's a clause in the current ECA which says you have to do it, but it says you can, it must be economically feasible. The new bill seeks to take that away. And I'll explain why that is. It's these nuances, I call it housekeeping, but these nuances have big implications in terms of costs. All assignments of spectrum will be subject to the principles of open access and non-exclusivity. Then, Chair, I have to ask the question, if you're going to auction spectrum, what are you buying? Then we should just give all the spectrum to the WAN, because then what's the point of buying it? I'd rather go to the WAN, I got more chance of success. Now, again, if you put everything into the WAN, right, The yuan is an untested model. There's not one country in the world where this concept of a yuan has worked. We in Kenya, the yuan failed. Right? The Mexican model, which the ministry and everybody else was so excited about, has failed. Has not worked. By the way, the CTO of that network used to work for me when I was running Vodafone Spain, so I know him quite well. The coverage, MNOs will be subject to inefficient coverage obligations, requiring to roll out in rural and underserviced areas but before being able to deploy in spectrum in urban areas. That doesn't make any sense. We should have rural obligations, fully agree, but the need, the dire need is in the cities. When we came, and it was me who actually suggested this, but that was suggested 6 years ago. It's 6 years later, we don't need this thing anymore. What we need now is we need, because we're sitting at 82.5% 4G coverage and it's growing, we need to make a provision that we go and cover it, and we're given tight deadlines, fully agree. But we need the spectrum now in the cities, because that's where we're wasting money, by building more 3G coverage, more capacity, and so on. So you need to have a model that talks to both things. The one being given a disproportionately large amount of unexcited spectrum, I think this is fundamentally flawed. Why would the one need more spectrum than the biggest player in the industry? Or the second biggest player? If we take that the one is going to take a few years to gain market share. By the way, the one is not a retail network. The one's going to sell to us. So the logic escapes me. And this, cumulatively, these things will all have an impact on the chilling of investment into the telco sector. So mobile operators, Jay, invest for the long term. Your licenses in mobile are normally 15 to 20 years. Okay, the lifetime of mobile equipment is 8 to 15 years. Anything that creates uncertainty in that respect can have an effect on investment. And it doesn't matter whether it's Vodacom or the small guy who's going to invest in the one, the same thing is relevant. They're still going to need certainty in terms of the investment. And more so if you're small, because you're going to be borrowing money, right? If you're going to be borrowing money, you want certainty. You want to know exactly by way of what can you expect and so on. And I'm sure my friend Irene will contest to that about certainty in the telco sector. cost-based wholesale open access. So, allow access to the sites. We're not saying we don't want to share, but do it on a commercial basis. So, in my view, the one, if I was designing the one, I would say, don't charge the one for spectrum up front. Okay? Give them the ability to pay it off. Because if you say to the one, pay 3 billion, 4 billion, 5 billion just for the spectrum, the one is going to be dead before it even starts. So rather say to the one, look, let's give you a fair chance. Here's some spectrum. You'll get the same amount of spectrum that the biggest players have. Go for it. But, and they'll buy capacity from you as well. You'll have access to their sites and so on the same basis as they sell to each other. The incentive that they should be given is it should be one big incentive. And the one big incentive, I would suggest, in my humble opinion, should be that they don't pay up front for it. And that they're getting capacity bought for it. And that will ensure their success. If you say it's basically, you know, it's on a if you say that you must give access even if it's economically not feasible, I just took an average cost of 550,000 rand per site because that's what it's costing us today to upgrade a site from one technology to the other. On our 13,000 sites that we have today, that will cost us 7.1 billion just to be able to accommodate. That's just us. Let's not talk about the rest of the networks. open access to a non-exclusive use of spectrum. To be honest, I don't get this provision, because if we got a WAN, why do we need to give open access on the spectrum? We've created a wholesale open access network specifically for this reason. So if I'm going to pay for spectrum, we should have some certainty of what we're paying for. So the two concepts are not gelling. And I think the two concepts, you know, I'm failing to see why we need both. Rural coverage delay, I spoke about this one. I think the biggest issue here is give us obligations, tell us, you know, you have to go from 90 to 95% in the next year, you have to go from 95 to 98 in the following year, and so on. Set obligations, fine us if we don't achieve it, but don't tell us that we must first build rural coverage and then build urban coverage. The need at the moment is where the cost, where the inefficiency is in the cities, where you need to be using the spectrum to alleviate the problem, so you're not wasting money building more sites. You're putting the money into where the spectrum is required first. So, again, this doesn't really understand how telcos really work in real life. Preferential treatment for the WAN. The CSI study, and again, this is the reason why we need a CSIR study when we have a regulator and with a couple of hundred people, I won't go into. But basically, the CSIR study proposed 45% of the spectrum, the undersized spectrum for the WAN. That doesn't make sense. Why do you want to give the WAN more spectrum than what you're giving the biggest operator? The biggest operator has 44 million customers. The WAN is nothing, and you're giving it the same amount of spectrum. I would suggest you're wasting spectrum. So that's the one part. Secondly, I would say you're losing the opportunity to raise more money for the fiscus, which you can also do. If you wanted to create a new, if you wanted to keep one for a new operator, potentially, and auction it and say, listen, I want to license a new operator, that would be more sense than giving all of it to the WAN. Because, the WAN will grow out slowly. It's not going to need all that spectrum. It's just not going to need it, and I think it's just... the second thing is the way you set it up. You should give the WAN certain advantages, and I think the biggest advantage you can give it is to exempt it from paying spectrum payments up front, right? And I think that will be a huge benefit to allow the WAN to succeed. But you shouldn't overdo it, because then you'll end up distorting competition. That said, we have made progress, because we started off by, let's take all the spectrum back from the industry, let's have just one WAN. So at least we have moved a bit. So the other part is the removing of powers from ICASA. Honestly, I think this is a disaster. I think you should not kill a regulator that's been set up by government for very, very good reasons to ensure independence. If you're not happy with the people, I would urge the committee to then change them. But you don't take away a regulator and just decide, no, you don't need the regulator anymore, and then basically divorce the independence and merge it into a ministry. It doesn't make any sense. These things have been set up constitutionally. They've been set up with good reason. They've worked well. They work well in all countries around the world. This is not a unique structure that, only South Africa is. Why would you then want to do away with it? If there's a problem, deal with the issue. If it's undercapacitated, capacitate it. But don't kill the regulator. I mean, there's a couple of hundred people that work there. Then these people ensure the success of both the broadcasting as well as the telecommunications industry. There's lots of spectrum stuff that happens on the borders. There's lots of management that needs to happen. There's lots of interference things that need to be managed. You know, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. If we're not happy with something, then I think, you know, if the people I work for aren't happy with me, they should fire me, not change the whole company. So, you know, I just think it doesn't make honestly, I don't get it. So, I think also the changes in Nepal fall short of the constitution. It violates the rule of law and the doctrine of legality. It infringes the constitutional and guaranteed independence of ICASA, and it violates property rights. So I think there is some. I don't really want to focus on the legal aspects. You know, those are in the submissions and so on, and can be looked at in detail. You know, but I think there is constitutional issues with this bill. I'll now hand over to Andrew to talk to us about the impact, the economic impact of the bill.
Thank you, Chair. So mine is very brief, because you've had a very long week, and you've had a lot of this before. But just by way of assisting the committee, you will recall that one of the annexes we provided was an economic impact assessment. And then we thought we would further assist the committee by providing a technical impact assessment. And then we thought we would also assist the committee by providing an expert opinion. And then we thought we'll go one more mile. And we attempted to then rewrite the draft bill for the committee. The idea of the impact assessments was really so that the positions that Vodacom has adopted and the positions that the CEO has been arguing, so that it could be placed in some quantitative and some qualitative context. That was really how could we constructively assist the committee, understand the position, and just look at the impact assessments. So very briefly, Chair, I think just by way of my introduction to this short segment is that the view was that if the proposals of the bill was implemented, the market would be constrained by what Shamila has referred to now as regulatory uncertainty. And the story or the storyline is with regulatory uncertainty, there's lower and delayed investment, and with your lower and delayed investment, there's slower deployment to new mobile technologies. And really all that the impact assessment does is it shows what is the impact on the consumer, number one, and then what is the impact on the economy. And so really the first slide there is the proposals will affect investment in the short and medium term. I think the key takeout from the bill there, Chair, is simply this, that the consultants say, having looked at international developments that Shamila has alluded to, conservatively speaking, it will take 5 to 7 years for this world to become functional. And now you have to overlay the fact that the culture of licensing regime in South Africa, both with the second network operator and the delays there, and the third mobile operator and the delays there, suggests that 5 to 7 years is perhaps conservative. But this is quite an important assumption to understand the impact assessments. It's quite a fundamental one as to when this entity will be fully functional. And so what we tried to do is we created two worlds or two scenarios. There's a world in which if the bill is implemented, what is the impact of that on the consumer and the economy? And there's a bill, there's a world where if the bill is not implemented, what is the impact of that on the consumer and the economy? And so a lot of, when you read through the impact assessments, it will give you a sense of what the difference of those two scenarios are on the consumer and on the economy. So very quickly in the next two, three slides, the key takeout, this slide is what is the impact on the consumer? And there, again, the story there is regulatory uncertainty, there is lower investment, there is slower transition to new technologies. So it will affect the consumer through three ways. On the one hand, there will be higher prices, and in blue it says mobile data prices would be up to 15% higher in the environment if the bill is implemented. So just stated differently, that data prices are expected to fall less quickly under that scenario, under that world. And so it will affect the higher prices will result in lower usage, and the impact assessments really unpack what that is. There will also be lower quality, and the entity we spoke to there was North Stream, and we asked them, what will the impact of delayed assignment of spectrum be on data speeds, and what will that impact be on coverage? And there's a 35% lower under the bill scenario. And then the last one is if you aggregate all that together, there's an overall impact on consumer welfare of 45 billion worst off. So the idea here really is that there will be a negative impact on the consumer. The next slide here just now takes it to the level of the economy. And the important take-up there is there was an important impact assessment done on SA Connect 2013. And if the committee will recall, SA Connect estimated that if broadband targets were achieved, for example, 400,000 jobs would be created, 130 billion would be contributed over a 10-year period. That was sort of SA Connect 2013. So what the economists did was they using that methodology and that model, and they also added one from Deloitte GSMA that was 2012, and on the basis of that they did their own impact assessment. Now in the March presentation that was done to the DTS, all these sort of economic and econometric modeling was part and parcel of that submission. So that is in the public domain and that is also available for everyone to see. But the summary there is quite staggering as well. There will be a negative impact on GDP, there will be an impact on lower employment, and there will be an impact on lower tax revenues. And that's quantified. The lower range of the values put there is with respect to if you use the methodology of the SA Connect 2013 approach. The higher range is if you use the methodology of the Deloitte GSMA. And I think just the last slide, Chair, is just there's also a very important technical analysis that's provided for members of the committee. There's also technical work in the document itself, and there's issues of interference of what is being proposed. This is the real technical engineering stuff. There's issues of how practical some of the proposals is with regard to having real-time spectrum databases. There's the challenges that the CEO has alluded to about spectrum refarming. But all in all, the impact assessments, and we actually do welcome a broader conversation and debate on it. There was important assumptions made that all of us can debate on, there was findings and conclusions that I think all of us can debate on. And of course the question then is, what is the implications of that for the consumer and the implications of that for the economy? We still maintain that the work that was done is a very conservative approach, but by and large, the world in which the provisions of the ECA is implemented as is a world that is fundamentally different to the world where the bill is not implemented. And just by way of conclusion, when the company says that the bill will not be implemented, the no bill scenario, it still includes the regulatory interventions that are taking place. There are interventions around lowering mobile termination rates, end user subscriber chart and out of bundle rates, and the market reviews. So in the no bill scenario, it just assumes that the bill in its current form is not implemented, but all the other regulatory interventions proceed. So if I can just hand over back to Shamil.
Chair, maybe just a comment, because I think one of the easy ones to fix is the technical viability. I would suggest that, that this be subjected to people who've actually worked in a telco and actually understand, and maybe get one of the engineers to look at some of these requirements, because they don't add anything to the bill. If subtracted from the bill, it wouldn't do anything, but it creates, if implemented, it creates a huge amount of complexity that actually just is completely unnecessary and really does nothing to the bigger picture of what you're trying to achieve. Wholesale open access network, those are big debates. Those are worthwhile debates. These are things like, why would you want to approve refarming? It's just it's a waste of energy, honestly. And you're going to just create more complexity. Instead, you should rather take the spectrum away if people aren't using it. I think that's a more relevant requirement. So Vodacom Chair proposes a competitive one. I think just to recap, what we're saying is that the one should be given a fair chance to succeed. It should be given a big incentive in the form of pay later for the spectrum and so on. It should be blackout. It should be multi. I know people are pitching for one or one party to take the one. It's not our place to say, but I would think that you land up in the same position a year later, where everyone who's not been included in the one is complaining that the one is the big bad wolf. So, you rather have a situation where multiple players can invest together to ensure success. So people want to invest in spectrum or want to invest in a network are given the ability to do it together. They could naturally do it, but this encourages them to do it to do it in a shared model. I'd say I've spoken about this, so let's skip on. Vodacom's positions on the key matters on the bill, access and sharing based on commercial agreements, economically and technically feasible, should be retained. Renewal of spectrum licenses should be preserved, because you're giving, the one will need the same as well, it will need the certainty. As long as conditions are being fulfilled, normally, and the relevant fees are paid. In a lot of countries now, you pay a bigger renewal fee. That could be one. You can also attach new obligations and those type of things with it. If you've not fulfilled your obligations and you've not paid your fees, then the spectrum should be taken away. Coverage, we spoke about it. I said allocate the underserviced areas to the networks to be able to service. Personally, I would say if you have the different blocks, say you have the four blocks for the industry, one block says KZN, one is Eastern Cape, one is Western Cape, and so on. So you kind of, and you let the networks do a rule of rural coverage there, and that they need to share between each other, because I think it is quite costly. Vodacom has taken it on itself and is rolling out a lot of that, but it's not always economical. But my view on these things is that you're a big telco, it's your responsibility to make sure that every person is connected. Jay, and on that note, I'm ready to take questions. I just let me just conclude by saying thank you, but also say to the committee, I would urge you to please apply your mind carefully and not be rushed into a tight deadline to get this thing through. This determines the industry for the next 100 years, and that you on your shoulders lies a very important task of shaping this industry going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Perhaps let's just make a general comment on the issues that have been raised, and then allow members to delve into the questions. We have taken note of the concerns being raised, the issue of the policy uncertainty, the concerns that are being raised about how the industry looks at current bill as it stands, as well as the confusion that comes about as a result of the issuance of the request that the minister has issued recently, and therefore questioning the relevance of certain clauses in the bill. I mean, you've asked a very interesting question, that what is it that if the auction were to be, I mean, if you have the contradiction that comes about by the existence of the one and the auction approach, where the industry would possibly be considering one, because I mean, those contradictions, I think the department the DG will deal with the issues. You raise the issues of failure of certain industries in the world. I mean, your Mexico, your Rwanda issue, the issue of open access, and so on. A lot of other things. The attitude, and you raised the issue of rushing the bill. The attitude that has unfolded over the week that we've been dealing with the matter, or actually over the past 3 weeks, because that's actually the time at which we almost have been dealing with this bill, is that there is no intention of Parliament to rush the bill. Secondly, we will not embrace a situation where there is concern about the policy uncertainty. We'll have to thresh those things out as Parliament. That is part of our responsibility. The department can present a bill in whichever way they want to present it. Could be a very radical right-wing or left-wing bill. It's within their right to do it. But that doesn't result in Parliament passing a bill in that way. Parliament must, apply its mind. And that's the work that we should be doing and that we will actually have to do. Now, what we have taken, just to try and rush perhaps towards summarizing what I want to say, is whereas there is a view that we are at a crossroad, our attitude is that we actually have the greatest of opportunity, because we are going into a parliamentary transition between the fifth and the sixth parliament. we are left with only 5 working days in Parliament, or 7 days if you include tomorrow, because indeed we do work Saturdays and Sundays. Do after hours, no increase, no over, what do you call it? No overtime. There's nothing called overtime. So we believe that we have an opportunity that we are able to accept the presentations presented by all, including those that came in to give their oral submissions, including the submissions made by those who did not show up for whatever reason. They did give us reasons, others unable to come over and so on and so on. So we are collecting all this data. We actually will work like a research institute, collect all this data, walk it through. We already have certain positions. We've identified something like 6 to 7 contentious areas. Ranges on the question of the necessity or not of one. The issue of the constitutionality. Just going to throw things, even if I'm saying it the rough way. Usurping of powers from ICASA, just using the word. No one has used that name. Yeah? I'm just using it just to restate the issue because people have been careful in the manner in which they encroachment of ICASA powers and the constitutionality or not of such a move. The issues that has to do with the land expropriation in terms of what the bill is proposing. The issue of the rapid deployment and its mandate, and the Spectrum Management Committee, one of the contentious, there are about 7 contentious issues that we've identified. And we are saying, because the next parliament will have new people, all these people seated here may not come back. Because the ANC is likely to take 100%, so we're sweeping everyone away. Or the EFF DA alliance may come with a sweeping.
There's no such thing as an alliance between the EFF and the DA. That's for the record. Thank you, Chair.
Or a new party can come in and clean the whole landscape, or you can have the ANC reduced to below whatever percent. So anything is going to happen. Anything can happen. The electorate is going to decide. So don't worry. Okay. Calm down. Remain calm. So, what will happen during the intervening period? Next week we will decide on Tuesday. We'll actually discuss the question of the desirability of this act or this bill. Hopefully, if we can all sit down, decide, and we can find some level of consensus, we'll look as to whether we deal with that matter. Or we collect everything and we hand it over to the institution and say, this bill is desirable, so let the new parliament continue. Or we've identified 7 to 8 contentious issues. We've instructed the department in the intervening period to workshop these contentious areas and try and get people with varying views to narrow down their concerns, and let's see whether there can be consensus in terms of how is the bill crafted. And then the resultant effect is we may come up, or the department may decide to withdraw the bill. Because anyway, it will lapse naturally when Parliament prorogues. Or we may come back early next year during committee to do the desirability issue, finalize our report, hand it over to the institution and say, this is our view on the bill. Perhaps when we come back at that time, because we'll still have a hearing with the department, have you made any significant move between the 7th of December to the end of January? Have you been able to think thoroughly? Because indeed, they've been hammered, they've listened, they've taken a move, as much as presenters have also taken a particular move. I mean, you had presenters that were on the ultra left or right, as I put it, whatever right means and whatever left means. But everybody is trying to really say, let us deal with these things that will help our country to move forward on the things that the bill is trying to achieve. Amongst them, you've spoken to the question of lowering of the cost, the issue of empowerment, and a range of other things that are crucial that the bill is trying to do. So how far have we moved? If we then say we actually have, over the intervening period, moved this far, these are now, we are remaining with a few contentious issues. We are abandoning the encroachment into ICASA, and ICASA also coming to the party and say, you know what, we have spent so much years not moving, now we are upping our game, we are making a commitment, because we will need that commitment, the new parliament will need that commitment, that there are not going to be these delays that have been raised here, where instead of South Africa performing at the level at which other countries are performing, we find ourselves at the level at which you're saying we are actually there, close to the exit, in terms of what we have achieved, the absence of spectrums. Other countries that are smaller, you made an example of Lesotho, here neighbor, our neighbors here, that they're already on 5G. South Africa, that is supposed to be the biggest economy in the continent, is down there. There's not, who has not done what needed to be done, okay? There was no movement, we had double departments, others was holding the transition from one to the other. Today, the DG, we only have one DG, we have one minister, we have one ICASA. So this transition intervening period is going to help us to deal with all these rough corners. And hopefully when we come back, we can then have a narrowed bill, and we then request Parliament to invoke the bill or rework bill, and we find our footing. Because I think what we will not do as Parliament is to fail this country in its objective to achieve the empowerment, to achieve the upping of our, of the performance of our economy, because that will result in job creation and all sorts of other things. So these are the things that we should actually be taking into account and ensuring that as we conclude the bill, we do these things. And the question that we're asking, is there a need for a bill? Is there anything that industry can do in the intervening period to address the concerns that are, so that there is no need for us to enact the bill? Or so that we can actually discard some of the clauses in the bill, because it would not be necessary that there has been movements. There are many ideas that have been thrown around. I guess if all those things are taken into account, it will make our work even much more easier. I guess that's just a comment I wanted to make before allowing members to ask questions, if there be any. Madam Shin, Madam Tsotetsi, Mama Ndongeni, and Mr. Mackenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question, because there's fairly extensive documentation to support the presentation. Mr. Yusuf, you said right at the beginning that you, I presume you meant Vodacom, lost is 140 billion rand over 4 years because of the uncertainty in the regulatory environment. Did I hear you correctly? And if so, please can you give some sort of detail on how you arrived at that? And which 4 years are you talking about? You know, 2009 to whenever.
Thank you, Chairperson. Having listened to small players over the past few days and listening to the big player now, I must say one is a bit confused, you know. However, we shall ask the questions and please bear with us, especially on areas that you think you've highlighted that might have been not clear to us. And your comments, you know, some of them are so scary that one thinks some of the questions are somehow irrelevant now. But I'll just ask a few. That on page 3, on the milestones, transformational milestones, in conjunction with the next page that speaks about your commitment to South Africa, that many of the small players are actually appealing for space in the ownership of one. Some even said if they can get at least 2/3, you know, of this one. If you hit the call and give that space, will you really be harmed by that corporation? And if yes, to what extent will your profits be affected? And on your commitment to South Africa, we must once more I applaud you for the commitment and what you have achieved in page 3. However, as public representatives, we are not you know, engaging only in committees, but you do oversight as well. So it's important for us to have the geographic, you know, location of what you've delivered here so to do oversight and do the check and balances of the presentation. And we're happy that we're going to distribute 40 tablets to the learners. So I'm trying to jump other questions as I really felt really intimidated that 40 million? Yeah. So it's really, yeah, something to write home about. Really, I appreciate that. I'm not so clear on the bill being overtaken by events. If I can get a little bit of explanation on that. And, okay, on the road errors, I think I can understand that one. And on page 30, I'm jumping all these questions. On page 32, where you talk about the higher prices that will result in lower data usage, which is really detrimental to you know, very poor communities because of this development, we can't do without the usage of data. This is part of the errors, I say, they're really scary. And we see them as sort of, you know, taking us back when we're so excited about the development of this IT. And you said the bill has failed in other countries. You know, we're not at that level of having made some research. And we think situations differ in countries. We're not sure what was the cause of that failure. And did you do some feasibility studies, you know, to say they failed here? We in South Africa are going to improve on the basis of what we have learned from them. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. How many smaller players you have adopted, especially in rural areas? The second one, why your network is not the same type, similarly quality and speed? When you are in town, it's clear and it's right. When you are in rural areas, it's fainted, or you're supposed to go to the mountain to get the network. You said your coverage is more than 90, or is 90 or less 90. Why you don't give the spectrum to the small players and give them? Or if you think the small players is going to fail, what you have going to done? Have you gone, because all of us, we don't want anybody is going to fail. We are all in equal, or we are all in a competition. So we're supposed to do something to make South Africa forward. But I know we are talking about the commercial. So I'm not quite sure. I don't understand you guys. Okay. When you connect a school, how much you charge to maintain a quality network? And is it equal amount in each school, or is it different schools? Can you please explain to us? I'm not quite sure. And then let's go to page 17. On your page 17, you're talking about vendors invited to RFP. 14 SMS were invited to respond to the what. 9 responses received, 5 declined. Why they declined? And then 17 what shortlisted and 4 were successful. So what about others? What we have done about those who have failed? Thanks, Chair.
Kenzie?
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Vodacom, for your presentation. Just as a disclaimer, Chairperson, I use Vodacom on my tablet. Not on my phone, but on my tablet. And it's a great service. Mr. Yusuf, you said that your company lost 140 billion in market cap, just to build on Honorable Shin, over the last few years. I've seen, if I look at my IRAs over this last year, the performance has been dismal, and unit trust has been dismal. So the market performance generally has been dismal. How does that affect your the statement you made on your market cap? Then your plans to invest 50 billion over the next 5 years—that's a huge sum of money, which is obviously make a big impact on our economy. And then in brackets, you conditionally say, assuming existing legislative and regulatory framework remain in place. So in other words, let me see if I've got this correctly. You're talking about a telecommunications legislative and regulatory framework, and should the ECA amendment bill be enacted the way it is, does that then put this 50 billion at risk? Then your access, in your presentation, you were talking about access to free websites. I think that's great. That's really innovative. Do your, just to see if I've got this correctly, if I then have a Vodacom contract here and I've run out of data, I can still access these sites on my iPad. Do any of your competitors do anything similar to that? I'd really like to congratulate. And also your 14 million tablets. You know, my personal belief is that the ICT sector is it's the highway towards changing our economy and towards bettering the lives of our citizens, and that 14 million tablets just illustrates that point. We've had a couple of people come and make submissions before this committee, and I've heard this several times from several presenters, saying that the bigger telcos have embarked on retrenchment processes. In terms of employment for South Africans, is your workforce progressively larger? Is it larger now than it's ever been, or have you been embarking on these retrenchments? And how would you generally assess the level of skills in terms of meeting the needs of your company in the South African workforce? And then lastly, do you have any programs or initiatives to develop MNVOs on your network? Do you have anything in place at the moment? Thank you, Chairperson.
Any takers on the left?
Thank you, Chair.
Let me start with Ikasa. Oh, you're fine. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Vodacom's concerned that spectrum may be assigned on an open access basis and non-exclusively. Well, open access is a fundamental policy change in the White Paper and the Bill. Chapter 9 of the White Paper is clear that on the need to transform the six operators controlling spectrum to many operators being able to share in the use of spectrum. So to provide clarity, it is high demand spectrum after the bill that is released when there's a law that is non-exclusively assigned or should be so assigned. It doesn't mean that spectrum must now be placed in a commons. It doesn't mean suddenly there will be interference. It doesn't mean that if an operator has an active it does mean that if an operator has an active infrastructure sharing obligation in future, like RAN sharing, that operator then can't claim impossibility to implement the obligation based on vested rights and exclusively assigned spectrum. So active infrastructure sharing by implication means a sharing of the spectrum, but for example, RAN sharing is done in a managed way by the engineers to ensure minimal interference. There's also a concern that MNOs won't be able to refuse access based on, and the word refuse there, refuse access based on economic feasibility. So the fact that this aspect is lifted to this presentation illustrates that we have identified the bottleneck correctly. For years we've heard that access seekers use economic feasibility to frustrate, access providers, use economic feasibility to frustrate and block access. Vodacom state that the WAN should be subject to the same facilities leasing rules as any other operator, but unfortunately this may enable the MNOs to then block access by the WAN to MNO facilities and networks. Under the current ECA, we emphasize that ICASA must ensure effective facilities leasing and resolve disputes between the WAN and the access providers directly. Otherwise, the WAN simply wouldn't be able to get access. The framework must change, though, through the bill going into the future. We deliberately decided to leave out economic feasibility for the reasons I explained, but we've left technical inability as a ground to refusal to ensure reasonability of the bill. Vodacom also argues why rural first rollout is not ideal. The department clarified earlier this week that the term underserved area may be more appropriate than rural. But we also use underserved areas in both documents. There are underserved areas in urban areas where immediately available high demand spectrum, high band spectrum can in fact be used. And where backhaul exists that will enable compliance by a willing operator. It may be more costly, Chair, to use the available spectrum in rural areas, that's a fact, but it depends also on the geography. If the obligation is not imposed now, we risk that the lack of rural access will perpetuate. In any event, there is a discretion for ICASA to determine exactly how the obligation must be complied with that will take practicalities into consideration. On the matter of spectrum refarming, we have said that we need to see how to make it practical, but without losing the requirement to ensure commensurate obligations for the same spectrum bands. Vodacom stated that the WAN should not have coverage obligations and be able to deploy its network where there is demand. In other words, it's a WAN for the urban areas proposed. Well, it's a key tenet for us that the white paper that the WAN must cover underserviced areas. And I can read the part, but effectively to ensure full population coverage in reasonable space of time and importantly the required capacity. So the MNOs that buy capacity from the WAN will also benefit by having deeper reach into rural areas if it has rural coverage obligations. Vodacom motivates for maintaining the status quo under Chapters 8 and 10. They say that they do not agree that all MNOs must provide cost-oriented rates, for example, Jefferson. Without repeating the white paper, the bill does not provide that all MNOs will attract the full open access obligations. Some will, if after following due process, they are classified as operators that, for example, have SMP. But rate regulation is at the wholesale level, and it must happen in due course for selected large incumbents. Why? Because it's necessary to reduce data and other communications costs. We emphasize that due process must be followed in this regard, Chair. Vodacom points out to the differences between the bill and the policy direction and really tabulates it in the context of the WAN and the high-demand spectrum provisions. So it, the two can't be the same, Chair. The policy direction is issued under the current legal framework in the ECA. The bill presents a future legal framework where you can refer to wholesale open access, for example, so the documents will obviously differ. The two instruments also became public at different times, so it may therefore be different. Now that we know that the policy direction will be first, due to the developments around the bill, and not the bill, so it means that the proposed provision in the bill will take the policy direction into consideration and how that pans out. Chair, from the onset, Vodacom makes the point that the bill will become irrelevant if spectrum is issued under the current process and act. The department disagrees. The bill includes a number of critical matters from international roaming regulation, open access to networks and improved competition regulation that will better regulate incumbents, improve competition, drive down costs and achieve other policy objectives. Lastly, Chair, the policy with respect is not a mess, though it does not always favour large incumbents but favours SMMEs and transformation and reduction of costs and really socio-economic upliftment. And we're not killing the regulator. We support our regulator and its independence, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Just feel free to grab a cup of tea or coffee and water there whilst we continue. We're not going to adjourn for tea now. So whoever is keen to have, just proceed. I know it will look a bit rudish, messy, but it's fine. I think let's just try and chase our time.
Yeah, Chair, it's Friday. So it's possible. Chair, I just want to deal with a couple of issues. At a more strategic policy perspective. By the way, as I said yesterday, having agreed with the proposition of the committee, not because we do not have a choice, but because it makes sense to deal with things as you have indicated. Now, the first issue is the debate as to how many operators can be in the market. And we have heard from the big operators that, in fact, the market can only take three operators. But then how does government or even parliament come to a determination that says, oh, Ms. Chanley, please forget, you are late. There are already enough operators. Don't come to the market. Now, in a liberalized market, there is always a constraint whether you can say to her and a timid smile that you are late, forget, we can only have three operators. It does not happen that way, Chairperson. When people come to us and say they want to invest, our course is to see how to enable that investment. Now, if they fall by the wayside and collapse and everything, it is not possible for the department to say to, I'm just using Smile as an example, that please don't enter the market, you're not going to survive. This market is made for three players. No government does that. And if operators fail, they do fail on their own, because all what the government does is to create an enabling environment for anyone who wants to participate in the market economics to do so, and if they fail, they fail on their own. Now, Chair, on the issue around the history of the licensing of the spectrum, I think the CEO and others are very correct to say that it does not speak well for us that we are still at this stage of deliberation around spectrum. It's not a good thing. I was at ICASA when we started the process in 2006. Now, 12 years later, this process has not moved. We have not licensed the spectrum. So it's just not good for all of us combined if that is the situation. But here's the difficulty. The difficulty is that it's around finding consensus, aside of many other attendant issues. Whether we can ever find consensus and move through without any problem. Now, the small companies call us and say, let's talk, we think that this thing can be resolved even outside of parliament. When you meet with them, they say, yes, the best way, give us more and give them little. That way, we have resolved the problem. Then you go and meet with the big companies. They say we're big, and big is good. So give us more and give them little. Then you have sorted your problem. So you can understand that everyone will easily say that, no, we can simply discuss this issue, we'll find each other. But when you say assist us in finding each other, everyone says, no, in order to find each other, give me more and give them little so that the problem goes away and we've resolved the problem. And we thought that the CSR study and in the way that it came out, it may have its own imperfections, I guess, from scholars of models of all rules. But what turns out is, short of what has been proposed on the table, we have not seen any other way to achieve consensus, as I have indicated, because both cases are quite compelling in terms of what the companies need. And that's where we are, Chairperson. Now, what did we do with the bill and for it to come here the way it did? The bill, if you look at it, is a translation of what you have in the white paper. It's effectively saying that let's take the whole of the white paper and translate it into a legislative instrument so that it can apply, because in part there were concerns even in industry that certain aspects of the white paper were not subjected to sufficient consultations and engagement. And we took a view that it's very important, therefore, to make sure that you translate everything in the white paper into a legislative instrument and quite deliberately allow this process to come to Parliament the way it did, so that Parliament also can have a bite on the kind of issues that we are dealing with. I know sitting on the other side, you can say that if it was me, I would have just written policy in one day and done it in one day. It has not happened. We wish it could happen, but it does not always happen that way. So there is value in the fact that all of us have come to Parliament and have ventilated our issues the way we have done, even up to the House. So just one other issue. Now, on the issue of fiber that is being raised, whether we are focusing on fiber or just focusing on the wireless infrastructure, the whole section on rapid deployment, which has been very contentious since 2005 or 2006, when the ECA came into being with the old chapter that provided for guidelines, is that all of us are grappling with this issue to say, how do we ensure the rapid deployment of infrastructure in South Africa? So it will not be entirely correct to say that we are not paying attention to driving fiber. That's what we're doing. That's why we have rapid deployment. Now, to add on the bill versus the policy direction, I think it's foregone that if we can do a number of things using the current act and through the policy direction, then it would be good, because what we then do, we'll have to come back to this section as we finalize the bill and say, how do we restructure that section now that, you know, a lot has happened around it, and reframe it in such a way that is futuristic and does not deal with the current matter. So there will be willingness, Chairperson, on our side to then say that the policy direction has gone through, ICASA is running the other process, and all what we need to do now is, in future, how do we deal with this kind of issues? And then rework that section in such a way that it deals with the kind of the future issues. Now, on wholesale open access, Chair, we have been at pains to say why this has arisen. And we take note of the fact that the big companies are coming together, sharing infrastructure as indicated, and now roaming on each other's network. It's a good progress for the country. But we're asking a question as to whether the same can be extended to the WISPs, the ISPs, and all those kind of other entities. And if so, how can that be realized? So if the argument is that of the main operators, this is a non-issue, then we will raise a separate issue as we did in the previous days as to whether the same will be extended to smaller operators. And if that is the case, how will it be done? How can it be done so that it is not left to the devices of the main operator? Now, on the ICASA powers, we attempted to deal with this issue in many variations to issues that were being raised. And in dealing with the issue of ICASA powers, we have cited the current act, what it provides. And we have suggested that what we are proposing is not different to what the act is saying currently, but it's an elaboration of what the act says at present. Now, I gave an example of the Section 4, how it deals with the role of the minister in ICASA on spectrum matters. The first section there says that the minister, okay, let me put it the other way, ICASA must develop the radio frequency plan. Then the other one says the minister must approve the radio frequency plan. Now, it is there in the question of he must approve as to what does it entail in particular, whether the minister receives the radio frequency spectrum plan today developed by ICASA and sign. Is it must approve or must sign? Because must approve and must sign mean different things. And our understanding is that it is not must sign, it is must approve. So we just wanted to clarify that issue because, as I've indicated recently, there was a case when I came in where there was no frequency plan in the country because the minister had issues with what was recommended by ICASA, and it was not clear what needed to happen when there is a disagreement between the two. And that it took time to resolve that issue. Now, very lastly, Chair, we agree with the guidance that has been provided with a proviso perhaps that what are we actually going to be doing? Are we going to be reviewing the whole policy, or the focus is on the legislative instrument as to how do we as South Africans come with a legislative instrument that must stand the test of time? You know, it's a policy that is not aligned to a particular DG or minister, so that even when people are gone, everyone can still implement things. It must still happen in the country. So we will attempt on our side to take a lead by scoping the issues as we understand the contentious matters, but in such a way that this must not open us to an extent of paralysis, no decision making, and then taking more time to discuss. And ultimately, someone will have to take decisions. In some cases, it will be the minister. In some cases, it will be parliament, and of course, the president signing. So, but we undertake, Chairperson, that we will work with the in good faith as the department in assisting our industry to resolve very difficult and very contentious issues. It's not a game of winners and losers, but ultimately there will have to be decisions that some of us will love too much and some of us will love a little, and you know, something like that. But at least there will be something to love by everyone. At the end, maybe the degree of that love of the outcome of that process. Thank you.
One question that needs to be answered, DG and Alf. Shamil makes the point that there is something that is confusing.
on the call that was made by the minister for the he says there was an agreement or in the discussion that you had with the industry, there was an agreement that the industry will take 30% of the one. In other words, guarantee to, well, uses the words offtake or something else. People, different people use different names of the one. But in the issue by the minister, it's 30% per each place. I think that thing has not been clarified. If we could just clarify that matter, what is the position? What has happened?
Yeah, Chair, I think this is one of the issues that we will take and clarify further in the engagement with the industry as to what the intention is. What I'm trying to say is that we need to elaborate further on that. And I am also looking at it. But what we can do now, it has been susceptible to different interpretation. And I'll ask Alf to give the initial interpretation of that so that we see whether it's a case of interpretation or it's a case of substantive disagreement on the principle. But then the actual agreement was that collectively industry will buy a minimum of 30% collectively. So that is the agreement as of in May, when we met in May. So that is what it is. So if in the wording of what we have now, then it suggests a different understanding, we will then have to look at it. But that's the understanding, a minimum of 30% collectively.
Perhaps what you need to do is really to check what you have issued. I think that matter, you may want to deal with it between yourselves, not even in the meeting, so that you really go through this thing. There may have been a mistake that may require some attention.
Yes, yeah. I think what I'm stating for sure without any doubt is that it was a minimum of 30% collectively, meaning that the CASA can increase or whatever the case may be. But then when you look at the policy direction, that's what we're saying in the policy direction.
Well, Alpha, are you able to?
Yeah.
You checked it.
Let's start from May 2017. So what happened there is, and the CEO was there, and well, at least on the speakerphone, and a number of operators. So, yes, but it's one of those things, the so-called agreement, but what exactly is that agreement? There's no written agreement signed, so there can't be any ambiguity. So there was a matter of, firstly, if you don't have to return your current assigned spectrum.
I don't think that's the issue.
It's linked to that, Chief.
Okay.
If you don't return your current spectrum, then you have to buy 30% capacity. That was the first point. And then the second point was, but if we then also assign you additional spectrum, then that can be upped even to 50%. Those were some of the context. But when that was said about the 30%, the word doesn't, it was never said collectively or individually. We checked that up a couple of times. The only written part relating to that was in a subsequent budget vote speech of the minister. And if you go draw that and try to analyze that, you can interpret it either of the two ways, whether it's individually or collectively. So how it panned out in the bill was to say, which remember the bill came before the policy direction, the draft policy direction. So how it panned out in the bill was to say individual, 30% individually, right? And that's what the bill reads. Then we published the draft policy direction. But by that time, we already heard concerns from industry that's unworkable. Firstly, that in their view, that's not what was agreed. And secondly, it's unworkable because if you have three individual capacity buyings and you're already at 90, that leaves too little capacity for the rest of the sector. So that raised a practical concern for us. But at the same time, we had a problem because then the bill already says a certain thing as well. That's why we then built in a two-pronged approach in the draft policy direction. So the policy direction then had two parts. It had a first period, which ICASA had to determine, where it talks about individual capacity of 30%, and that period could arguably be 1 year or 3 years, whichever period. Then it has a second period, and the second period, after the lapse of the first period, then moves to the collective procurement of capacity, and that then solves the practical dilemma. Having said all of that, the policy direction is in a draft stage, Chair, and that's what DG is saying. We are considering those matters. We are considering those the practical considerations as expressed by industry as well in the policy direction. And we are, I think the DG is alluding to where it's leaning to, which is a 30% collective capacity, which appears to be what the industry also interpreted the relevant agreement with the minister to be. So that's where it is. It's not a finalized matter. The new minister must still be briefed on it and take decisions on it, but that's where we're leaning towards. And then it just means that the bill will have to be aligned to the extent that it's still relevant in due course with how the policy direction pans out. Does that make sense to you?
Just maybe to... Yeah, I think we're willing to live with clarity. You know, I think the intention is that when this matter is finalized, there must be no ambiguity so that all of us must know what it is. And as it is emerging now, is that the consensus will be more to do with a minimum of 30% when combined. So meaning that the industry players who will get spectrum, a minimum of 30%. That is what we're going to look into and recommend to the principal for approval, so that there is no ambiguity on that. There are obviously other matters that are also quick wins that we can find each other around, things like spectrum refarming. Those are the things that we can attempt to find each other. But Chair, as I said earlier on, these things of spectrum refarming, 30% buying, we will find each other and resolve those issues amicably. But as I said earlier on, what is fundamental is that the transformation package must be clear as the basis of any discussion that we're going to take place. So we'll find each other on so many issues. But it should be in such a way that at the heart of it, we should be able to advance real transformation. Now, we welcome what Vodacom just said about 40, is it 40 million? 14 million
school
devices to schools. And we'll be really...
You can't have 40. Look, the population is only...
Maybe some of us are going to be lucky also and get something, Chair. But I think what one is trying to illustrate, Chair, is that in the engagement that we're going to have with industry, we'll also need to identify quick wins in terms of transformation and say, this is the transformation package. As we deal with the commas and whether minimum or maximum, we need to be very clear in terms of what we're going to do to really advance transformation in the sector. And we look forward to receiving inputs from the industry.
CEO.
Thank you, honourable members. Let me start with some of the questions. The first one was the 140 billion. So what we did is we looked at the market cap 2 years ago, one forward is 2 years ago, versus now, and MTN, Vodacom, Telkom have lost basically a combined 140 billion. It's probably a bit more now. But essentially what happened is that the share prices have gone down significantly. It's fair to say that not all of it has got to do with, that doesn't incorporate the latest MTN drop. Okay, so we take that into account, it's more. This was done, I did this exercise just shortly before the last MTN this big issue of Nigeria. So, I mean, there was the issue around MTN with some of these issues, but the bigger issue is the, and if you speak to investors, what they're saying is that the South African environment is basically, there's a lot of uncertainty. You've come out of the white paper, which essentially was saying, we're going to take audio spectrum away, right? Then you've basically come out with an amendment bill that wants to make everything open access. What exactly, when you bid for spectrum, what exactly will you be buying? And that's the fundamental core of what the issue is. So I listen to my learned friends, but I don't get it, because if we're going a wholesale open access network, it means that's what we're doing. We're creating, we're choosing a route. If we don't choose that route, we choose an MVNO route. There's many routes you can choose if you feel that there's certain things you want to bring a regulatory intervention in. But when you have a mixed mesh of different things, you land up with uncertainty. Investors want certainty. They want to know what they're investing in. Let's put aside the fact we didn't touch on it. We still haven't done the digital migration in this country. You do know we had to get the people around us to not, so that we could manage interference, the countries around us, because we still haven't done it. Because we were caught up in which technology, who's going to get the set-top box tender, the fight between ETV, SABC, multi-choice, it still hasn't happened. So even this that we're talking about today, to put into perspective, the spectrum's actually not there. Only the 2600 is available. The 700, 800, the TV migration still hasn't happened in this country. Globally, there was a deadline set of 2015. We are 3 years past deadline. We're not even out of the starting blocks yet. The DG in his new role will be given the very unenviable position of sorting this out in the new combined department. So DG, I look forward to working with you on sorting that matter out, but it's not there. So I think that's one of the issues. So it's really about clarity for the industry. For Vodacom, a big issue is basically because South Africa is such a big part of our business, it hits us more. And Telkom for that matter as well. Ownership of the WAN. If two-thirds of it was black-owned, no, it will not harm us. I think we're not saying there shouldn't be competition. And I mean, just to be clear, we're saying if we're choosing the route of smaller players wanting to create a WAN, we're supportive of the WAN. So I just want to be clear of that. But the WAN must, when you give the WAN part, you mustn't say, okay, this is open access, but this is open access as well, because then you're confusing things. One is, if you want to be in the open access network, you join the open access network, and it should be about clubbing together our spend to build together and so on. Whereas in the network side, you should say to the bigger networks, there's a spectrum, we're charging you for it, here's the obligations that are set. Fulfill those obligations, build the rural coverage, and so on, that's linked to the spectrum. And I think there's a clear distinction that we need to make there. On the geographical assets, I will ask that we make an additional submission to show exactly where the schools are, the training centers, and so on. So Taki will supply that in an additional submission to the committee. When we say the bill is overtaken by events, I'll ask Snakes to just give us some more clarity on that.
Well, thanks, Shamil. Thanks, Chairman. I think yesterday one of the speakers said one of the challenges we have, some of us have been coming to this house for the last 20 years, and the debates have played out in the same manner, at least for the last 10 years. But I think the biggest issue that we have is you have a policy direction, you have a piece of legislation or draft legislation that is on the table considered by this committee. and you're dealing with a number of policy issues, which one are very complex, but secondly, they mean in many ways a fundamental alteration of the market structure as it existed in South Africa, at least over the last 15 years. And from a policy perspective, and that's certainly not Vodacom's call to make, it's often prudent to focus on one instrument. So if the issue is that we want to enable the one, we want to encourage sharing, the first consideration has to be, can that intervention, policy intervention, be achieved under the existing legislative framework? If it can be so achieved, and I believe it can, you possibly do not need to table another instrument on the table, which in this case is in the form of making amendments to the Electronic Communications Act. Because in so doing, not only are you dealing with the one issue, but you introducing other policy issues that create the level of nervousness that the CEO was speaking to just a while ago. So I think what this committee need to consider is whether is it appropriate, especially taking into account that the 5th Parliament is going to rise in the next 3 to 5 months, to consider the draft legislation, and whether should the department focus on the policy direction. As I've said, he's been given comments, or the department now has comments, fine-tune it with the explicit purpose of achieving what appears to be the goal of the president. And then, of course, in parallel, they can brief parliament. And it doesn't matter whether you're government or you are a business organization. If you try and juggle with 100 balls at the same time, you're likely to end up with a situation where you lose control of all the 100 balls. They'll all fall to the ground. But if you're juggling with 3 balls, you're likely to achieve your optimal outcome. So, overall, I think our input has been that it's inopportune at the moment to deal with amendments to the Electronic Communications Act. Fundamentally, because from our perspective, we believe that the existing legislation has the mechanisms that are required. If, as an example, we were considering enabling A1, and that secondly, you cannot be juggling with many balls, be it as parliament, be it as government, and then we need focus, and possibly that focus must revolve around the policy directions that are on the table, refine them, and then move to the next stage. And in so doing, you probably would be in a position to auction spectrum and deal with the concerns of the other small operators by September of next year. But with the many issues that are in the table, you're looking at a situation where possibly Parliament is going to say, we're not ready for this. And there will always be an overlay or hangover over the fact that there is a bill that speaks to something else. And the fact is, a bill, once it becomes law, it will override the policy direction that is based on a piece of legislation that is going to be amended. And for as long as the market individuals have an apprehension that you're going to change a law at some point in future, that's when you have a situation where the markets exercise caution. And it's caution in the sense that we're speaking to an auction, government wants to maximize value. But once you have confusion, we will say we will participate in the auction, but the price that will be offered to government would take into account the risks that are inherent in the fact that we have a multiplicity of policy instruments that are possibly creating confusion. Shamil spoke about an auction that took place in Mozambique not so long ago. I think the auction was a number of bands, but for certain bands, I think it's 1,800 and 2,600, they were not takers because it just didn't make sense in the market. They were only able to auction the 800 band. And I think a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago, Mozambique was in a similar situation. Nobody was interested in the auction because there was a lot of confusion from perspective of the policy environment. Equally, the pricing was not underpinned by the reality of the fundamentals of the market. So I'll pause at that point, Chair, with a question. Let's not juggle 101 balls at the same time. Not only will the Minister of Communications fail, the country will fail, and we don't want to be in that situation.
Chair, do you want me to continue?
Okay. Yeah, you can proceed. You can proceed.
Okay. The next question was why is it 15% higher, which is slide 32, in terms of what will happen if we had a non-competitive one. I think the issue comes in that competition exists on two parts. Competition exists in infrastructure investment, and competition exists in pricing. I listened to Telkom earlier. What they didn't tell you is the reason we have a lack of fixed infrastructure in this country is because we had a monopoly. Today, 80% of the market share in fixed is still with Telkom. And the reason for that is because we had no competition. We have to create competitive environments to do it. If anything, if you look at our fixed mobile, our fixed lines, they've gone backwards. And that's because there's no reason to compete. It's been replaced with mobile. So one of the big things is that you've got to ensure that you have competition. Now, if the WAN's intention is to be there as a single one to aggregate everything into one big monopoly, honestly, it will not work. Because if we were all part of this one, what will happen is telcos are about capital investment. Some of us here in this room will have lots of money. Some of us will have less money. If we're all investing and next year comes in and we don't have the capital, then half of the room will fall away because you'll be diluted. Or we'll get into a fight amongst ourselves and nothing will happen. That's why you need competition to be able to do it. And if you put all your eggs in one basket, then and the basket fails, you're in deep trouble. Whereas if you have the part, and also it is true that there's duplication of infrastructure. Let's be honest about it. But in there lies what we're doing. In there lies competition. It's like saying let's build one supermarket or one hospital and everybody will go there. We know that that will never work. We need the competition between players for that to happen. And it's the same here. You need to have the competition between players. You want to have a one for the smaller players to aggregate their spend so they can ensure their success better. Can make sense. But if you're going to put everything into the one, it will fail. Why has the one failed is one of the questions. There's a lot of studies on it, and if the committee desires, we can send you that, both from an investor perspective as well as from a technical perspective, where investors unpack why the Mexican one hasn't worked. And remember, we went to go base this whole thing on the Mexican one. Let me just highlight that as well. The Rwandan one hasn't worked. The Kenyan one, I can tell you firsthand because we own a big stake in Safaricom in Kenya, hasn't worked. So, I think we need to be, and as I say, we want to go down the route, let it be because smaller players want to aggregate their spend. I don't agree with the DG, and I think it's the point raised is fundamentally flawed. Telcos cannot have 100 players. Not in the infrastructure layer. You can have it in the service layer, but you cannot have it in the infrastructure layer. The God-given spectrum doesn't exist for that to happen. You only got X amount of blocks of spectrum. Let's just give you an example. In the 800 band today, there's 35 megahertz of spectrum. My friend Irene says all the 35 megahertz should go to the WAN, and the 700 should go to the industry, which is, by the way, what the directive says. So Irene, I see your hand in that. But my point is that if you didn't, there's only 35 megahertz. Now take it, if you broke it down, you want 17 players and each one gets 2 megahertz. You need at least 10 to make the thing work properly. At least 10. If you're doing 10, that means you've got 3 players and you might have one with 5. That's it. That's just the capacity and capability of the 800 spectrum. That's it. That's finished. So, DG, we need to, there's some big limitations in that in terms of you can. And that's why if people want to combine their spend in a WAN, then that makes sense. The other thing just to mention is that the why should the one get more and the one get less, I don't think we should give... As operators, I'm not saying give the one less. As the one side should not be saying that the operators say get less. I'm saying if Vodacom has 44 million customers today, and it's taken 25 years to get there, and MTN is 33, and Telkom is 12, and so on and so on, it's taken this long to get there. The one will not require more spectrum. I mean, I'm not saying give Vodacom more spectrum and the rest smaller. I'm saying make it equal blocks. Because the one doesn't need more than the biggest player who's got the biggest constraint. So you need to, it needs to be a balanced approach. So don't look at giving the big ones saying the small ones get less and the small ones saying the big ones get less. Give them equal. And that then solves your issue. How many smaller operators in rural areas? The issue around the rural area one is what we're doing is it's, a network is one network. What we're doing here in this proposal that we put forward, or rather what we've implemented, honorable member, is that basically we're trying to ensure that we put in, we build more local tower co, so local entities that own and build the towers for us. The reason why only 4 is successful is because you can't have too many. So you put it out to tender to keep it fair, and then you try and give it to 3, 4, 5 players and so on. And essentially what will then happen is they will then in turn implement smaller players. The reason we've done this is one of the complaints that we faced with, to be honest, and I think has come before this committee before. As telcos, one of the biggest issues we have is dealing with all the small operators ourselves. We're not really set up to deal with 1,000 small players. We have 1,000 small players that build fiber and so on and so on, but normally you have an aggregator on the top, so someone who's aggregating and working with the small players to be able to do it. The complaint that has come forward is to say, yeah, but generally a lot of those small, let's say middlemen have previously been white. So we want to see more transformation in that respect. So this is one of the ways that we've done it, is to ensure that in the... So we're transforming at that level too, because we've had to transform the whole channel. I mean, just to explain as well that... and I don't think many people realize that the telco ICT charters are very stringent. So before, foreign spend used to be excluded, commissioned entities like your distribution has been, all of that has changed. So today, 46% of our stores, our franchise stores, we have 280 franchise stores, 118 of them have changed hands and they're all blackout. Right? So, and we have incentives every year where we buy back the shops from the previous white owners, and we sell it to new black owners, and we even finance that. So these are the type of things that we do to ensure that we transformation. But even the big channels, the Huawei's, the Samsung's, the Blue Labels, and all of these type of people, we're forcing transformation throughout, because if we don't meet our points. If we don't meet our points, we don't get government business. We're the biggest supplier to government in mobile, and we can't afford to lose that business, to be honest. Okay, so that was the, that's the one. Why is network not the same in rural areas? I think the issue around why the network is not the same is really the issue around access to transmission. So remember, when you build a base station, you've got to connect it back. Now, because the rural areas have huge distances and very little concentration of people, it becomes very costly. And Telkom doesn't have the network. Historically, you've got some of that from Telkom. They don't have the network to be able to do it. So you have to build long microwave links. So we're doing it, but you do it so you're sitting in 98.9 and so on, to get to 100%, and that's why we're pushing and building more. We did 100 new sites in March as an example. We're doing another 250 this year, 249 this year, where we're actually rolling out and going to the very rural areas and building this so we can close this gap. Because historically what will happen is you would have, and why it's better in the big cities is because you've got 4G in the big cities. You've got 3G in the small areas. And historically you'd have 2G. So you'd either have no data coverage or you'd have 3G. Now, so the more people start to use it, the cell becomes smaller. And to build this in a rural area, where in a city, when you're building one site to take over from the other side, it's easier. This is the complexity. But we are doing it, and we've made sure that we're prioritizing it. And to be honest, we're the only network really doing it. So I think that's the one part. Why don't you give spectrum to smaller players? So you can't have, and for the reasons I explained earlier, you can't break the spectrum up. So you can give distribution agreements to smaller players. You can have access to distribution. So we have something like 150,000 people that sell for us. Everything from a spaza shop to a retailer to our franchise channels and so on. And today we have 280 franchise stores where we own the leases and so on. Of that, 114 are black owned today, and black female owned. When you connect a school, how do you charge, Taki?
Thank you. The school and teacher connectivity, this is part of our corporate social investment. So government doesn't pay, because that is when Vodacom gives back to society. The footprint for the teacher centers and also for the schools, this is also found across all the provinces. And in terms of the cost, we are spending an estimate of about 350,000 rands per school. And per teacher center, we are spending about 2 million, depending on the size of the teacher center. And the biggest teacher center is about 15 million rand. And this includes connectivity, the maintenance, and anything that is required to ensure that the teacher center runs on a regular basis, which includes the training. So we will do a proper written report so that we give you the geographical footprint, and also the breakdown of the amounts per teacher center and also per school. Thank you.
The next question was, thanks, Taki, plans to invest 50 billion in the next 5 years. Does ECA put it at risk? So what we're saying is that we will invest 50 billion into our network. The ECA puts it at risk to the extent that it creates uncertainty. Our intention is to spend the 50 billion. The last 8 years have probably been the toughest in the telco sector because of the uncertainty, but we still continue to invest. I mean, this last year we spent 9.3 billion, the year before was 8.7 and so on. So we haven't stopped investing, because the minute we stop investing, the quality of service goes down, you start to lose customers, and so on. So you have to continue to invest. And we've always
we believe that in the end, you know, we will find the right path in South Africa. It's just frustrating that it takes so long. It's like the digital migration. You know, it's not that difficult to do, to do a digital migration. It just requires that you've got to basically say, you know, so one of the suggestions I've given, for instance, is let's look at the people that are getting social grants. Let's look, we can from there, you know, we've got that. We've got the data of the people that have registered for voting and so on. We've got the people that are receiving the social. If we cross-link those two, and we've got where they live and so on from the mobile data, if we cross-link these things, we can easily identify who's the people that qualify for a subsidy for a set-top box. Or, in fact, it's moved on now. You can put a dongle in. And most people have smart TVs today. Maybe in some of the very rural areas you still have some old TVs. But it can be done quickly. It just needs the commitment and focus. It doesn't help that we keep changing ministers, you know, and so on. And that's created part of the confusion in the department. Now that the two departments are reintegrated, hopefully the comms and the telecoms part can now make it happen. Free access to sites, how does it work? It's exactly as you say, the URL, as we call the internet address, is zero rated. So example, if you're in a university and you go onto university portal, you don't pay for the data. You go onto job site, you don't pay for the data. And just to clarify, on the 14 million, what government has done? So we're not giving 14 million devices, we're going to help government get 14 million devices out there, because what government has done now is they've digitalized the textbooks. So the entire syllabus is now digitalized, which is fantastic. But we now need devices. So what we're working with government on is to how do we facilitate that. They're going to have to do it over a 3 or 4 year period, but we need to get, because now everything's online, which means we can't have a situation where kids don't have it. What we've said to them, if you want to access it from your textbook and so on, or from your phone or anything, almost effective immediately, as soon as they're ready, basically, data on or for all Vodacom customers, for all schools, anywhere in the country, is free. We still need to get more actual tablets or laptops into kids' hands, because, you know, accessing it from the phone is not going to be the best way to do it. And that's what we're working with them on, is to try and get subsidies and those type of things. And I'm pushing the Googles and the Facebooks and so on to help us. Is the competitors doing it? No. But the minister, deputy minister, has assured me he'll be pushing us. And on the basis that we've done it, I said, use that to get the other guys to do it as well. A question on the retrenchment process. We're continuing to grow headcount in the country. We have both direct people and outsourced, so we have a lot of outsourced services. Strange phenomenon that's happening is re-insourcing. Companies have started to realize that this whole concept of outsourcing, actually you don't necessarily get the same quality that you would if the person works for you with the same passion for the brand and so on. So now we're going, especially in IT, we're trying to re-insource the skills. You know, it's just interesting how industry works. That said, you know, SIPO spoke about a lot of process automation and so on. So what we do internally in Vodacom is we try, it's not that we never have people leaving, we do, but it's never, it's tens of people here and there where one department you restructure and so on and so on. We never have a big, or we've not had a big restructuring. What we try and do instead is retrain the people. So if we're going to put in bots that can do it faster, we retrain the people, take away the vacancies, and we fill the vacancy, we retrain those people and redeploy them. And our intent is always to protect our own staff first. But we continue to grow in new areas. Financial services is a new business for us. So we can data, video, music, all of these things are now becoming part of the digital world of a telco, so you have to have those services for your customer. So you're also requiring a lot more skills. We also work with the universities to develop the skills. One of my big concerns is that I don't think South Africa has enough skills for the next
for the fourth industrial revolution. I think it needs to come through in our basic education, which we've been talking to you about, you know, basic education, higher learning, secondary education, and so on. And I think if we can embed artificial intelligence, machine learning, robotic process automation, we need courses for these things. There's only one or two universities that offer it, and still at the basic level. The world is changing fast. So one of my big concerns is that we're going to get left behind if we don't make this. But part of it is also if we can get the kids to grow up with a tablet in their hands, that will make a big difference as well. Do we have the development of MVNOs? So the biggest ones, and obviously, because we're spectrum constrained, we generally have gone for the roaming option. So we have Telkom, Cell C. I'd venture to say that's the best form of it, which is deeper than any kind of MVNOs. And the MVNOs, in turn, have gone to Cell C generally. So mainly they've gone to Cell C. And let's say because they were a big customer, one didn't feel like we should steal the MVNOs away from them. But since they moved their stuff, one less sensitive to that. So, yes, we are willing to take on MVNOs. Open access, RAN sharing, and some of the comments that were made by it, I just think we're choosing two different things. So respectfully, I don't think if you're going for an open access network, you've got different remedies that you can choose. You can choose to have MVNOs, or you can choose to have open access networks, or you can choose to have a WAN. You can't choose to have everything. So if you're going to create the WAN, which is then saying that smaller players will get spectrum and they will accumulate the spectrum and build a network, then you need to give the industry the ability to carry on. The question of players complaining that we're blocking them from access, personally, I don't quite believe that. I think if there is players, please refer them to me so I can find out what's going on, because long ago we decided to, the principle of share has long been embedded. We're now sharing, we've just signed a deep package sharing agreement with probably our biggest, the most aggressive player in the market, or two of the most aggressive players, which is RAIN and Telkom. So how much more sharing do we want than giving the smaller players access? It is not true that we only have four players in the market. We have six players today with access. Two are not fully utilizing their spectrum. And the reason why, even though some of them have had their spectrum for 15 and 20 years, the reason why, they're not prepared to put in the investment. So that's the question that we should really look at and understand that it's not a lack of players. Six players in a market is a lot by global standards. The fact, but in all countries you have people who put in money and people who don't. And when selecting telco players, even in this new WAN world, you need to make sure that people have money, would be my advice. The question around rural first, I just think the rural part can be covered. I think if the WAN is given the rural part, that's fine. If you want to, that's not going to be our responsibility. As an independent view, I would say don't labor the WAN, give it a chance to succeed. And I think if you tell the WAN that it has to do rural coverage first, and you make it an obligation, I think it will struggle. That's only 25 years of experience, but okay. You don't want to hear. Sorry. Spectrum refarming obligations. Refarming is not based on bands. You cannot. Spectrum obligation should not be based on bands. Spectrum obligation should be based on, we want that area covered, don't cover it, that's the minimum speed. You should not set it by trying to set and trying to try and approve every refarming thing. It's too complicated, it will take too long, and you have to change it. And where we're going is dynamic spectrum allocation by site and refarming dynamically. This will take us back to 15 years if this thing is implemented in the way it's currently written. I would seriously suggest
that when we relook at some of these things in the new cooperative way, that we seriously take some of the engineers that are actually doing these things and look at some of the implications on it. The bill and the directive, is it inconsistent? You can't pay. So on the bill and directive, the issue around the bill and the directive is that the directive is setting something that's going to happen by March next year. The bill does seek to talk to the next 100 years. But if the bill takes away the rights that are in the auction, like, so instance, you're going to buy spectrum. This is 3 billion rand minimum that you're going to have to pay. It might run up to 5 billion, whatever, that you're going to have to pay for the block of spectrum. Then the bill comes out and takes away your rights and says you must make it all open access. Then why are you paying 3 billion? And I think that's fundamentally flawed. So it needs to be fixed before you issue a bill. The next one is that we need to ventilate issues fully, and that Parliament gives us the chance to ventilate issues. I fully agree with the comment. However, I do think it's a travesty that we need to come to Parliament to sort our issues out. Why could we not have had more of these forums beforehand and fix some of these issues, including the directive and so on, before we sit in front of Parliament and make it their responsibility? As industry, I think that's a failure on our part. On the question of rapid deployment is not fiber. Rapid deployment speaks to fiber and so on, but it's not fiber in itself. It's a means to deploy faster. Fiber is a bigger issue for this country. The country is lacking. What do we want? We want cheaper data prices. How do we get cheaper data prices? How do people globally get cheaper data prices? They have Wi-Fi. We're using a technology which is called mobile, which has got limitations. A base station only has so much capacity. You need Wi-Fi. If you put Wi-Fi into a house, you have unlimited capacity. 5G will start to improve it, but when do we license 5G? If we can't even influence, if it's taken us this many years to license 4G. I think we need to, and remember, even if we make a decision now, the spectrum's still not available. We're still going to go and find it. The 5G spectrum's available, and I would suggest that we bring that forward. So I think the bigger play, and if you look at what's happening globally, all governments, or rather let's say the European Union, go look at New Zealand, look at what they're doing in the States and so on. The big focus is on how do we get fiber into every house. That drives down your mobile costs quite significantly. I would say by focusing on mobile, I'm not saying it's not important to have legislation for mobile. I'm just saying there should be an even more important part. And if this is the legislation for the next 100 years, we should then be thinking about the next 10 years or the next 15 years. Where is the terabyte per household that we should be looking at? On the reintegration of the department, on ICASA and the questions around ICASA. DG, you now have the nice task of ICASA reporting to you. So basically the issues between the two departments and the complexities that were created, and honestly, you know, it wasn't the DG's fault. I'm not surprised that the department wrote the legislation to try and fix the issues, because the department, the communications department, the ICASA, that whole thing and the way it was split up created a lot of complexity. But I would suggest now that they report to you, you don't need this legislation. You can fix it and you can capacitate it properly. Just a thought. On the 30% collectivity part, I don't think there's any disagreement. Remember, I was the one who made the proposal. So the proposal was clear. It's in writing. There's letters that have been sent as well clarifying the issue. 30% is a collective agreement for the industry. The drafting and the way it's been put in is not conducive to what was agreed.
And I'll stop there. Okay.
Thank you. Alf, I think go and look at that issue. It is confusing. If what you say, what you are saying, I mean, if I read this thing, I understand it in the manner in which they are speaking to it. But when you had an elaborate answer, which is for me difficult to follow. So when we craft documents of state, let us craft them in such a way that anybody that reads it understands. And okay, let's put it in such a way that indeed it, I can answer it, because if I read it, I revisit it, it is saying something else. So I agree with the CEO. Reread it, because this is how government litigates and lose cases. Ms. Mbua, the big losers, ne? It's only these days that we are catching up. But just revisit that page 8 of the minister's statement, clause 1.12. Let's just read it properly. If you are comfortable about it, let us communicate it properly and clarify it, because it is confusing. But I guess we've come a long way. We are better educated with all the information that's been shared. And once more, also thank you to you, Telkom, Vodacom, for the many documents that you submitted to us, including your new proposed bill. A lot of research work that went into some of these things. We appreciate it. Gives us more knowledge, understanding, and I guess we are better off. And as we move forward, I think it is important that let's try and take the ideas, views that has been presented to ourselves, DG, and let's engage. So that when Parliament finally has to enact, we do not have a situation where you are supposed to be closer to the, I mean, yourselves and industry are supposed to be giving us almost a narrowed situation. So I guess, but we have an opportunity to do it. Let's use our wisdom and energies, and let's use the avenue created now by the merging of the two departments to close the gaps as the soonest, so that we as Parliament are not put in a situation where we have to legislate and regret when that happens. But fundamentally, whatever we do, let's do what we can in the best interest of the peoples of our country. Let's do what we can do to ensure that the economic landscape of our country gets transformed. Our people can feel to be part of our evolving economy going forward. Let us include our people in the true sense of the word. So that they feel part ownership of this future. And I'm happy with the feedback, although it was actually we dealt with issues which are outside the lawmaking process. And I know that you invited members of parliament to ask questions on matters that are not part of the lawmaking process, but it was indeed because of the offerings that were there. Somewhat diverted, but it's fine. At least we got a lot of good feedback that we'll see more shops in Sandton, those big centers being owned, I mean, you've other shops that are there being owned by black women. So that's beautiful. Young people, I mean, it's progressive. We want to see them. Let them be in the center. Let's not continue to perpetuate the past special developments where the spaza shop in Kwakuka
belongs to a black. It is known that it belongs there, and in the city center, a center where monies are flowing every day, it belongs to a white. We have to make sure that we work towards making sure that at the end of the day, as we move forward, we're able, through our economic interventions, to achieve the advancement of this child that was left behind by the system of apartheid. We are running off our engagements. I assume there is nothing that we are leaving out members. What is left for us is to see how we chart our way forward. We will meet on next week, Tuesday. Perhaps because we did not have an opportunity amongst ourselves to reflect on the things that have been presented. We only have 2 hours next week to talk about what has been presented to us over the period and therefore agree on the way forward. Perhaps we may have to do, if we find another day during the course of the week or sometime in future, January or February, where we look at our very short report, because we can't have a comprehensive report. We'll have to do a very short, nice report that says on these matters. And hopefully those that are assisting us were able to identify those areas where we feel there must be discussion. And then let's see where we'll be when the new parliament takes over the work that we have tried to do. And with those words, thank you very much for everyone that has participated and spent hours with us here, very stressful hours, not sufficient food for you, but I guess it was in the business of trying to do what we want to do. I am adjourning the meeting, and have a good weekend, and the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.